Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, let's celebrate hump day. Why not? If no one else does, we must.
But they do.
Pick up the mantle. Who else celebrates? Do you know anyone else?
I know some other shows that reference it.
Like radio shows?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Stations I would like or stations I would not like?
You like our friend Todd Elba.
Oh, does he also celebrate?
He does it.
We could almost say we stole it from him then. Did he do it before?
His show predates our show, so.
But has he done the hump day? Mm-hmm. He has. Mm-hmm. Well, apologies to Todd Elba, who's a really nice guy and great broadcaster. For stealing,
he's probably listening.
Yeah, sorry for stealing your idea, but we have mucho.
I don't think he came up with it either.
No, of course not. Well, we have mutual appreciation for you celebrating because that's what we do on Wednesdays. Now, today we're talking about a completely different thing than hump day. Although Democrats, you might argue, are sort of getting over the hump from the bad fall to the last year to the great fall this year.
It is wild how on a dime just how media talks about anything can change so quickly. Because what have we heard, even us, the most of this year? And again, this is based on polling, but just the general sentiment is Democrats are so unpopular as a concept, as a party, just no one is happy with the Democrats. And whenever they get polled, they're even less favorable than like Donald Trump, even as Donald Trump's polls have fallen. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden last night, there's a great night for Democrats. And now the message is, oh, they're back.
I would argue that.
I don't know if they're back or not, but it was a very good night for Democrats.
It's a little different because it's state versus national election. So that there's still a lot of uncertainty in Democrats. We'll get to all this stuff.
But across the states.
Yeah.
It was a very good night for Democrats.
That was a big win. And I'm going to give my Republican friends worst case scenario. And we're going to get into some of the nuances of all this stuff. But this, I think, and you're not going to like this.
Me?
No. Republicans.
Got
my
it.
Republican friends. This is the start of some bad news for the president in the weeks and months ahead. Why do I say that? Horrible results last night. You can spin it however you want. I know that early this morning he's lecturing the Republican senators in the White House on how they screwed up and how the shutdown needs to end. So that's one thing. For Republicans, listening to some of the Supreme Court arguments today on tariffs, not going well for the president's administration. I believe he will lose that argument. The courts will say, you don't have this power. That's another setback.
And that's a huge setback because it's also, what do they do with the money?
Exactly.
What an administrative nightmare trying to figure out how to get them. Because it's going back to the companies. It's not going back to our pockets.
Yeah. No. And so figuring that out is going to be hard. And then this is the big one, sort of a signal that next year, this president and his party may be in trouble for midterms. And why does that matter? And the president said this morning to the senators, if you watch any of that video. If they lose the House, which is probably the most likely.
Definitely the most likely.
And or both. Here's what's going to happen. Trump will be impeached again. And there's like a laundry list of things you could impeach him on. We've talked about many of them. Now, you can have a different opinion on that. Certainly welcome to share it on the talk and text line 855-616-1620. But more importantly, any agenda that the president has in his next few years, especially if the Supreme Court does limit his powers to do what he wants with executive actions, he's got nothing. He is a classic lame duck, worst case scenario. Best case, this is just a one-of election. Democrats have the right candidates. Mondani, New York, Spanberger.
Cheryl.
Mikey Cheryl. Who, by the way, I'm not a Democrat, but great candidates, great bios.
Yeah, I mean, the two of them, I will say I got a little choked up. Not that I followed either race super close, but Spanberger, they're both the first female governor of each state, for
impressive.
New Jersey and for Virginia. And Spanberger, there's a moment in her acceptance speech because her family's on stage and she has daughters. And she goes, I can say to my daughters, your mom, like she looked at her daughters and said, your mom's the first woman governor of Virginia. And I can absolutely with certainty to say no one has ever been able to say that again.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty cool moment.
That's about as good as it can get.
But that's the thing that's interesting now about these three, the three biggest races, right? It's you have Cheryl and Spanberger, both national security backgrounds. One was a helicopter pilot. One
great
was
bios.
A CIA agent. Both were elected to the House in 2018. The last time there was big midterms and it was this huge blue wave. Both moderate centrists compared to, the Democratic Socialist of Mamdani. But the thing for me is, what did all three of them run on? Affordability.
That's the bingo one. Because I'm reading some of the Republican commentary today, and they're all saying to each other, we got to get the affordability thing worked out.
People are struggling. Like, you know, the terms that keep getting thrown out this week, it's like affordability, K economy, just the cost of everything, and how many people, we're talking about the SNAP benefits and the long lines at food banks and stuff. And like, there is a huge portion of the population that is struggling, and not a lot of solutions being suggested in how to fix that.
And oh, by the way, if your argument as a Republican or conservative is, well, these were blue states. Georgia, the state of Georgia, not a blue state, had
it's a purple state. I mean,
it's a purple, but they had significant, including districts that Trump won, flips to Democrats. It was significant by big margins.
Was it a public utility or public service? Like, it's like a down ballot position. It's
I think you got to be careful with sort of characterizing as, well, those are just blue states. We don't care about them.
Oh, let's take a break because I want to break down, because I feel like what Trump Truth Social last night kind of says the quiet part out loud as far as Trump was not on the ballot and he won't be again in the midterms. So what does that mean? So stay with us on Point Taken.
Thanks for tuning in on this Hump Day edition. Steve and Kristen Bry on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. If you miss any or all of our show, I always say this. It's so easy to get up to speed. Go to WTMJ.com, click on our podcast page, or just find your podcast preference, wherever that is, and just put Point Taken in.
What if you just Google Point Taken? Are we the first thing that pops up?
I don't know. Good check. We're talking about the elections yesterday. I wanted to talk about California briefly, and I know Kristen has a lot of things on her mind about the election. We'll get to most of this in this half hour. And I said this yesterday, and I'm going to say it again, because I saw some of this last night, and it pisses me off. If Republicans, conservatives, squawkers sat out Texas redistricting, then you need to sit out California, because this is a direct response to what happened in Texas. Not that it's even, I think
they're both bad, they're but you can't criticize one and say the other one's fine.
So I'm giving you the radio version of shut the hell up, because if you're silent on that,
that's the thing that I just hate, that now that the other domino effect of other states doing this before next year.
Which they're, it sounds like I think it was Kansas. I saw the news yesterday. They said, no, we're not doing this.
So Kansas isn't?
Yeah. So some states are pulling back because there's sort of the law of unintended consequences. You don't really know when you start playing around the lines how that's going to shake out until you have an election. So there's some risk here. The play here, and this is the most obvious political play in the history of the country, maybe, the president is worried about the midterms. He's trying to game the system, and that's why he went to Texas first, because it's the easiest choice, right? Hey, can you play around with the numbers so we can get more people on my side? He's worried about this because for all the reasons I laid out in the first thing. But for California or Texas or Missouri or any other state, there were some states on the East Coast as well. I think Maine was tossing that idea around for a while. This is not what we should be doing. This is not good politics. And it sort of echoes the same thing I talk about when some people, including in the Republican side of the aisle, suggest that we should get rid of the filibuster. If you do that, be prepared for the law and the rules to change every time we have a new leader, because that's what will happen. There has to be 60 votes.
Maybe not today. It would be interesting to have a true, genuine debate on the filibuster as it is today. Because, you know, I think Bill, and I think it's one of the weird things where Bill and Joe actually do agree as far as how they've changed the filibuster, and that it can just be an email. Right. And that in its current form, it's doing more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
But do you start over? Like, do you take it back to what it used to be?
Yeah.
Or do you get rid of it altogether so that parties can actually... Because that's the thing. It's like we've become so partisan that you can't get compromise. So then literally nothing gets done.
Yeah. Which all the people who love the hyper-partisanship...
So is that a good thing? Is it a good thing like we can't get things done because it has to be that much agreement in order to get any of it done?
Good policy, good legislation should be able to get 60 votes. And that's a failure by the elected officials that were in this situation and voters who put them in. The process is the process. It can work if common sense, compromise, and sort of the continuity of government come back into play. We don't have that right now. And for all the people who say, yes, get rid of the filibuster... What do you think was going to happen when we have these super hyper-partisan gatherings? They're not going to agree on anything. And here we are. Now we're in the longest shutdown in U.S. history. which probably will end before Thanksgiving. You know why?
Do you think this because of last night's results, you think people now come to the table?
Sort of what the president said
this
morning.
Right? That was what the tweet, the True Social was. Or I had it. Trump, all caps. Trump wasn't on the ballot and shutdown were the two reasons that Republicans lost elections tonight. That was Trump posted on Truth Social. So one, quite literally, no, he was not on the ballot, which is an ongoing issue, right? For Republicans, when Trump isn't there, getting those people to turn out. Now, you can also argue that he was on the ballot, considering how many of the Democratic campaigns were tying their opponents to Trump. And just in general, this being a civic action people can take when they're unhappy with the current administration. But it also feels like in that he's, if you're reading it verbatim, that he's saying, we got to end the shutdown. This is not good for us.
No. And I think that's a smart realization. And I think he is angry this morning. And I saw, again, some of the video and audio from his presentation to Republican senators. He wants this over. And I would argue that maybe you need a wake-up call like this to sort of snap out of it, right? What are you doing here? We have to have a budget. We have to have policies that make sense for most Americans. And at some point, and you and I have talked a lot about this, SNAP is not a partisan issue. Healthcare is not a partisan. It's everybody. We all pay for healthcare. I don't care what your party is. I don't care who you vote for. We all pay for that. And when budgets, family budgets are already tight, you can't slap $3,000 or $5,000 or, God, in some cases, $12,000 on people and expect to just pick up the tab. You want to complain about credit card debt? You want to get there quick? That's how you do it. Because where are they going to get that money from? Other than selling a car, you're going to put it on your credit card, which is unfortunate and is not going to help anything about how this country's operating. I want to get your thoughts on Mandani quickly.
Okay.
His win in New York. What do you think that suggests?
I think it suggests, and this is, I have to be totally honest, I was not like glued to his campaign. I think through osmosis of how big the campaign got and how popular he became, I watched it from afar. I think there's a cult of personality there. He is incredibly charismatic. You don't get 90,000 people to volunteer for you without having it or having something, right? And so I think there's lessons to be learned as far as how he ran his campaign and the kind of enthusiasm and like message. Like, he was focused on affordability and didn't get into the culture war stuff, and like that was his main focus. So I think there's lessons to be like gleaned from that. Now it's just going to be interesting as far as what can he actually get done,
right?
Because as a mayor, you have your city council, you have to work with the state legislature, you have to work with the governor. Now Trump's threatening to not give them federal dollars. So there's a lot that he's up against to actually deliver anything. And I think he has to deliver something fairly quickly. Like, he has to get some quick first wins. Otherwise, he's just going to be the pointing to like why his type of politics doesn't work. But what I didn't realize is that Hochul is up for re-election next year. So it'll be interesting to see how willing she is to work and negotiate with him because of the power that he has now with his electorate.
She can't ignore the biggest city in the state,
no.
So she's going to have to play ball. Two things stood out to me. One, the importance of a impressive campaign at every level. Even Republicans agree he did it the right way. His social media stuff was off the charts. His volunteer staff, the way they
conduct. He speaks well. Like, just when you listen to him, you're like, and he also did a lot to, I know there's a lot of consternation over his kind of unapologetic free Palestine stance.
Right.
And he did a lot of outreach to Jewish New Yorkers, to other liberal Jewish New Yorkers, trying to dampen their fears as far as what his ideology is. And so that, I think, will also be like something to watch. But it is fascinating to me, and we were talking to one of our teammates who's Muslim, how far they leaned in, the Cuomo campaign leaned into racist tropes and Islamophobia, and it just fell flat, and it just didn't work.
A very diverse city. My last takeaway before we go to break, Republicans, conservatives, if you're not listening to the affordability argument, you're going to continue to lose elections. That's what all voters are talking about. They talked about in the fall, we've had not great results from what the administration has done on that issue, but all voters yesterday that voted in all those states said the same thing: affordability, the economy, and household budgets. Pay attention, because they told you loudly and clearly yesterday at the elections across the country, that was the number one issue. Quick break, point taken, 620 WTMJ.
The name is Mamdani, M-A-M-D-A-N-I. The name is Mamdani. Donnie.
Oh, we never miss a beat on this show.
Did he actually do, is this his like rap career?
No, someone did this on TikTok, I think.
Oh. He did have like a, I mean, it was in college, he was like trying to be a rapper or something like that.
Didn't we all try that at some point?
I do have friends who, when they get drunk, they think that they can rap.
Yeah,
and
it's, that's also a white guy thing, too. Yeah. And they always embarrass themselves because it's just not a thing.
I want to quickly correct myself. As a texter pointed out, I said both women who won their races in Virginia and New Jersey were the first women in their states. That was not true. Spanberger is the first female governor in Virginia. Mikey Sherrill is the first Democratic female governor in New Jersey. There was a Republican female governor before that.
It's impressive.
So, just going to correct myself, because that's what we do here when we're corrected.
Yes, absolutely.
We admit our mistakes.
It was impressive to me that two women were on those on that stage for both of those states, now going to lead their states.
Oh, it's great.
Big states, by the way. Virginia.
Wisconsin. When's Wisconsin going to get their first female governor?
That's a great question. There's opportunity.
There's opportunity this time around?
Yeah. Maybe the Republicans.
Is there any other rising, who's a rising star? Because I don't know if Rebecca Clefish would run again, but is there another rising star, Felskowski?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
As far as women,
Republicans,
GOP members in Wisconsin?
Yeah, there's a few. Well, that's a good future topic. All right.
All right.
Great guest coming up. We've had him on the show before. Yeah, you got something you want to mention, though. This is next week.
Next week.
Make it quick.
All right. Come play trivia with us. All right. You're going to join me, Steve, and Jeff Sherman for a special night of fun and giving. It's the WTMJ Trivia Showdown, part of Capco's Kids to Kids Christmas Toy Drive. I still got a couple of seconds. We're going to be at Revere's Wells Street Tavern in Delafield on Wednesday, November 12th at 7 p.m. We'll talk more about this later in the show to give some more details. But join us next week.
Thanks for finding us on this Hump Day edition. Yes, Wednesday. Already jumping through November. The days just keep moving along. We'll be the end of the year before we know it, but let's not get there yet. Joining us on the hotline, been here before, Todd Hirsch, Canadian economist, worked for the Bank of Canada, chief economist at an Alberta-based bank, author four books, impressive, and also taught economics at the University of Calgary. And I imagine Todd Hirsch probably getting over a World Series hangover.
I'm so sorry.
We are still licking our wounds. It was absolutely heartbreaking. Oh. And I'm not even a sports fan, but the whole country kind of got into this and got behind it. But all we can say is congratulations to the Dodgers because they did win.
They did win. But that game was, I said it on Monday, it was the best baseball game I think I've ever seen.
And I was cheering for for you guys.
I was cheering for you guys, too.
Well, we were the underdogs. But, you know, I guess the good of this is baseball has taken a whole new life here in Canada. I mean, hockey is our sport. Baseball is more, you know, it's America's sport. But the interest in baseball because of the Jays' run in the World Series, it's been remarkable. All kinds of kids are signing up now for baseball. So I think that's really great. That's a good thing that's come out of it, even if Toronto didn't take the series.
Absolutely.
All right, let's make a hard pivot because you're here to talk about tariffs and trade and all.
Hard pivot.
And the relationship.
He's not a sports analyst?
Well, he's not bad. He's good at everything, but and that's not his expertise. So right now, the president, it appears from the questions that the U.S. Supreme Court is asking the Trump administration about tariffs that he's taking a beating, and it's no surprise. In the Constitution, it says basically doesn't have that authority. I guess we'll start with this, Todd. How are the tariffs, these changes, the back and forth, impacting your economy and some of the key industries in Canada?
Well, it is absolutely wild, truth be known, for the last almost a year now, I guess ever since the what I call the tariff tantrum started back in January of this year, we have been whipsawed here in Canada. Industries don't know from one minute to the next what the rules are going to be, what the lay of the land is going to be. So it's been crazy. And in fact, to bring it back to baseball, you know, had Toronto won the World Series, I was a little afraid that the president might increase tariffs on Canada just because he would have been so enraged by that.
Sure, why not?
But it has been a difficult business environment for sure with the uncertainty around the tariff levels.
Todd, we've been talking a lot about affordability after the elections in the states last night, and just in general, this like K-shaped economy. And how much is that also happening in Canada? Like, are Canadians feeling the same kind of economic frustration as we are in America?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's probably even more difficult here because not only are Canadians facing the same cost of living pressures, you know, food prices through the roof, housing prices. We have a housing crisis, especially in our big cities, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal. So Canadians are feeling that as well. Yesterday, the federal government here in Canada released its budget. Now, that was a pivotal moment. It was the first budget that Prime Minister Carney and his new government has released. And it is a budget, what sort of they call for, you know, times of crisis. Canada, we are trying to gird our loins, to use that expression, bolster our economy in the face of the tariff difficulties. But yeah, Canadian households, they are, you know, looking for any kind of relief they can get.
Todd, this is sort of a simplistic way to look at the battles from the last year, but is it more politics or real economic pain? It sounds like it's the latter.
It is real economic pain for Canadian households, and that's why, you know, I think there is some frustration here in Canada, both with maybe some of the actions of the American, of the White House, but also our governments here in Canada as well, because, you know, they see our Prime Minister trying to stand up against you know, President Trump in this tariff dispute. But at the same time, they are struggling. How are we going to, you know, buy groceries this week? How are we going to pay our heating bill? How are we going to put fuel in our vehicle to get the kids to school? All of these things that for them are very immediate economic pinch points. Separate from the, you know, sort of that grand world of political statesmanship and how do we navigate our new relationship with the United States.
So with that knowledge that was as far as people struggling right now, are people not traveling to the United States because they can't afford to travel at all? Or is it like a protest of not wanting to vacation in the States so long as this, you know, kind of uncertainty spat is happening?
It's probably both, but to be honest, you know, there's polling information that says Canadians, even the ones that have the money and the ability to holiday, they're kind of avoiding the United States simply because we're a little pissed off.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's really important to make the distinction. We're not pissed off with American people. We're pissed off with the way the president has treated Canada and on our relationship. Sure, there are always things we can do better in a relationship like Canada-US. Just like in any marriage, there's always things that can be improved. But Canadians really felt disrespected by Donald Trump's approach to Canada, the tariffs. This isn't the way you should treat your largest trading partner and closest ally. We always thought we were, you know, big brother, little brother kind of relationship. And now you've taken our lunch money and pushed us down in the playground. So it's that feeling of some resentment that Canadians are harboring. And that's why a lot of them are saying, you know what, this year, as much as we love America, we love Americans, we love coming down and enjoying your beaches and your shopping malls and everything else, we're going to maybe spend more of our holiday money here in Canada, or maybe check out some other international vacation spots and just take a pass on the United States for right now.
Todd Hirsch joining us, Canadian economist. Todd, can you hang through the break? I got a bunch of other questions I want to ask you, including about this ad campaign that the premier of Ontario was running, I guess, or at least was involved in. Our guest, Todd Hirsch, will continue the conversation after this on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Continuing our conversation, Kristen and Steve, Point Taken on 620 WTMJ with Todd Hirsch, Canadian economist, author. How can folks find your books, by the way?
They can go to toddhirsch.com and order them there or on Amazon.
Very nice. And we love having Todd on because he knows of what he speaks. He's taught economics. He's certainly worked for some of the large banking institutions in Canada. This ad campaign that ran in the World Series, what was the relationship between the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, and those commercials? Did his party pay for it? How did that work?
Well, the government of Ontario would have paid for them. So, I mean, I guess taxpayers in Ontario. It was an ad campaign targeting American and American businesses, particularly. And it was all around this idea that sort of the icon of conservatism in the United States, Ronald Reagan, was no fan of tariffs. And it used some clips of President Reagan in some speeches going back to the 80s when Ronald Reagan was the architect of the North American Free Trade Agreement. He was a pro-free trader, and there's clips of him in this speech talking about how tariffs are damaging and tariffs, you know, are hurtful to American workers and American industry. Now, Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, and his government use these ads to try to sort of soften sentiment in the United States and remind people that conservative values are free trade values, as President Reagan was talking about on the speech. This irked Donald Trump so much that, you know, Donald Trump said, I'm not talking to Canada anymore. I'm not, the trade talks with Prime Minister Carney are terminated, was his language. He was really pissed off about this. So it's a little bit like dealing with the Tasmanian devil, you know, like it's the cyclone of chaos all the time. So the Premier of Ontario, he did not apologize for these ads, but under the pressure of our Prime Minister, he did eventually pull the ads down, but he is still quite indignant and believes they should be playing. He believes that Ronald Reagan's message of against tariffs is a message that Americans need to hear right now.
Was there any, in Canadian news coverage of this, was there any blowback that the Doug Ford got? Like, was there any rumblings of Carney scolding him or something because it kind of blew up trade negotiations?
Yeah, absolutely. Carney is, Prime Minister Carney, he's sort of the opposite of, in a lot of ways, Donald Trump. And, you know, people can take that as good or bad. He's very calm and cool and collected all the time.
Okay.
So rather than blowing up at Doug Ford, it was suggested that, you know, maybe Doug Ford rethink these ads and take them down. The conversation that happened behind closed doors, who knows?
Yeah.
I'm sure the Prime Minister was quite irritated with these ads. But in public, he was all very calm about this. And, you know, just saying that maybe Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, needs to rethink these ads. And perhaps it would be good if he could take them down. So it's all very calm and cool like that.
Let's talk about real life impact. Do Canadian business leaders see the United States as a reliable trade partner right now? Or is that sort of trust been shaken?
Oh, the trust has been not even shaken. I think the trust is gone, which is really, really sad. I mean, just simply because of geography, the United States is always going to be our largest trading partner. As much as we might want to try to expand trade with South Korea and Europe and China and everywhere else, Brazil, the United States, you know, in the case of Detroit and Windsor, it is literally across the river. It is always going to be our largest trading partner. But business confidence in the United States has been really rocked. In some cases, especially in automotives and those key industries like steel, aluminum, lumber, which Canada is a massive exporter of to the United States, the trust in the trade relationship has been completely destroyed. So we're in a really bad spot here in Canada, and I don't know how long it might take, if ever, to rebuild that trust with the United States as a partner.
That was going to be my next question, as far as like what needs to happen to build trust again, and what do you wish for American policymakers that are understood about Canada?
What we would wish to happen is never going to happen, and that is Donald Trump to wake up tomorrow and say, you know, I've been wrongheaded about this the whole time. I don't know what got into me. I'm going to drop all the tariffs against Canada. I'm going to send a fruit basket and all of my apologies just for being so ornery about this. That is never going to happen. And we have to accept that in Canada. We have to be, you know, grown-ups and understand the relationship is not going back to that. Rather than that, you know, going back to how it was a year ago or 2 years ago, we have to, in Canada, we have to sort of forge ahead, try to diversify our trade partners, try to negotiate the best deal that we can with President Trump, the whole USMCA, that is the North American Free Trade Agreement, is all up for review and renegotiation in 2026. That is going to be a really tough negotiation. It's renegotiated, by the way, from the deal that President Trump in his first term negotiated. So we're going to be renegotiating the very deal that he gave us the first time. But 2026 is a different time and a different world than 2018, which is when it was first done.
Todd Hirsch, we always appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us, Canadian economist, all-around smart guy, and a great guest on the program. Thanks for jumping on.
Always fun to be here. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. We have a lot more to get to, a little bit of this hour left, and of course, a full 11 o'clock hour, including Ask Us Anything. Quick break. Steve and Kristen, point taken, 620 WTMJ. Always great to hear another perspective. This time from Todd Hirsch. If you missed it, you can catch it on our podcast page. All right, so our newsletter came out last Sunday.
It did. It might be in your trash, though.
Yeah.
If you subscribed and did not see your email, check your trash, check your spam, and take it out of there.
Yeah.
And then it should be up. It should be fine for this Sunday.
Yeah, you can click. And then we're monitoring all of that. We want to make sure that you get it.
We're fixing the glitches.
Yeah, and every week it's different. So including this week, I make one of my recommendations on what you should watch over the weekend if you want to care about, you want to find out about what's going on in politics, because he's really good at it, Michael Smirkanish. And I'll have a link to his show on CNN.
It's a fun name to say, too.
Smirkanish?
Spamburger, mm-hmm. Smirkanish.
Yeah.
Those are fun names. So, yes, or if you haven't subscribed yet, text EXTRA to 855-616-1620, and we will send you the link to subscribe. And we got more. We got more to do after this. We got Ask Us Anything. We're talking about Wisconsin stuff in the next hour, because guess who showed up?
That's Jill Underly.
Is that a mean way to put it?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Quick break for news. Not so quick.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken, and moving things a little more local, we did the races and the elections in the first
hour. We went international.
We went international, talked to Todd Hirsch, economist mm-hmm. from Canada, and now we're going to talk about Wisconsin, and yesterday we finally heard from Dr. Jill Underly.
She got back from vacation?
Well, she wasn't on vacation.
She was
getting an award.
Bad timing.
Yes. And I would say, from the standpoint of a parent who was very frustrated with this issue and was worried that the urgency would die off, like sometimes happens with news cycles and when there's so much going on, I am very pleased that she showed up to this Senate hearing. I'm very pleased that they already have created this new online database that lists the names of educators whose licenses have been revoked or surrendered, and like are addressing that their current existing license lookup tool was insufficient. And it seems, and Ned Yuski, did I say that right?
Oh,
the representative.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they have, I have not read it yet, but they're still gathering co-authors for a bill to criminalize grooming. I want to see what that actually looks like, because it is...
Devil's in the details.
Yeah, devil's in the details of what that looks like, but there is movement there. So, like, I am happy that this has not just been a flash in the pan, and that there's actually movement, and it seems like there's some urgency around getting more transparency with these situations.
Here's what I'll say. I was encouraged by, and I listened to it this morning, her testimony.
Me too.
The fact that she showed up. I think she said the right thing. She provided some, here's what we're going to do. So there was some progress. There was action, not just yakking about action. I was encouraged by her back and forth with State Senator John Jagler, who, full disclosure, is a lifelong friend of mine.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Our dads worked together. We've known each other our entire lives. His life is shorter than mine, of course, because he's younger. But I like the fact that it was...
So you've known him his whole life.
Yes. Not him, not the opposite. But I love the fact that it was a civil discussion.
Absolutely.
And this is what is required...
It's less politically fraught than the
yes,
GOAT meeting.
This is what's required to have an honest conversation about our kids... And a dangerous subject that I think most parents are like, it raised their eyebrows when we weren't getting answers on some of this stuff. And I love the fact that it was fully transparent yesterday, right?
Yeah.
You could see it. I watched it this morning.
Yeah.
Anybody could go find it. You can hear the testimony. You can hear what's being discussed, including some ideas that will sort of change the dynamic so that the public parents, administration, staff can see what's going on in our school system.
Well, in the attempt to actually have some solutions versus just win political points on this at the cost of kids. And so I'm encouraged that this is moving in the right direction and there's actually attention. I still have questions over why there wasn't more, like, this was in the request for more resources, when DPI was requesting more resources for the last budget, that there wasn't a little bit more urgency made from the sense, like, this, there's this one thing that we need funding for, whether it's like more resources for more people to go through these investigations, because we do handle them with care, but that means they take time. And so we can't move that fast. And they, things don't get processed as quickly as they should. So we need either more bodies or we need more, a better tracking system, and like laying that out very plainly. And the fact that that still is a miss to me. That still is dropping the ball, but at least with this is what good reporting does. You shine a light on something and now there's opportunity to go fix it and people are working on fixing it.
I can't say it any better than you just said it. It's like
great.
Brilliantly stated.
Move on.
Because
point taken?
Yeah, exactly. Point taken. Acknowledged. I think it's a classic example of when you actually have back and forth communication instead of all these political talking points that you throw at each other or the barbs in over social media or when you do your interviews. This was an example of listening to the public, learning something from a journalist, a real journalist, who is looking at an issue that parents have concerns about, and then addressing it in out and open. Why is that so hard? Why?
I mean, I think what is hard, and we talked about this a little bit, I think it was 2 weeks ago. The subject matter is hard, and I think the cases are hard. I think the cases that are not obvious situations you turn over to law enforcement that are like, this is actually breaking the law, so you guys have to deal with this. But in these gray, nuanced areas of teachers having totally appropriate relationships with their students in the tech, that they're mentors and they're helping, and I don't know if the kid needs a ride, you know, these things where you like out of good faith are trying to help, and being able to pick that apart from when it's more predatory and there's some kind of sexual undertones to it. And like on paper sometimes, or on a text message, when is it clear and when is it not?
Here's what a school board member told me. Off the record, no names, no district. We need clear lines, clear information from our Department of Public Instruction on what is allowable and what's not.
Etiquette.
Yes. Yeah. You got to have that.
Like, can you text students ever? Can you give rides ever?
Yeah.
Can you meet outside of school hours ever? Like, there is things like that.
Can you
like
meet
that
with a student inside a building with the door closed?
Yes.
All of those things have to be answered. Because what I know about school board members, they're regular citizens.
Yeah.
They show up once or twice a month for their meetings. They're good people. They put their names out there on a ballot. They won their races. And now they're trying to do the best they can for the students, parents, and the administration. It's not an easy job. But they want clearly defined limits and expectations. We're going to get to another story in the next segment about another one of these examples. Tell us what the rules are. Because the school, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the school districts are saying, tell us what the rules are. And that's sort of what's happening on the other issue as well. I applaud the legislature yesterday, the people that were there, and I applaud the Department of Public Administration, Superintendent of Public Instruction, for doing and saying the right things yesterday. That's a positive. That's a great look forward on what you can do. And I also want to go back to the reporter we talked to from Cap Times.
Danielle Duclos.
Brilliant reporting. A great example of why real journalists, not advocacy, real journalists, their work matters because it's changing the conversation and the dynamic in the state of Wisconsin. That's an example. That's what I talk about. That's what we talk about. That's why we have them on the show. All right, after the break, this whole cell phone thing, smartphones. Well, the governor signed it.
He did.
Now what? Next.
All right. You got your wish, Steve.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of people got their wish. Well, but also there's more to this than just what the law says. So Governor Tony Evers signed the law banning cell phones in public schools. But what does that actually mean? It actually means that by July 2026, every school district needs to decide what their district's rules are. So it's still having the local control over It is not a statewide, these are the rules. It is a statewide, there needs to be rules.
Yes. And I would encourage school districts to pay attention to what the population of Wisconsin, parents in Wisconsin said here. They are concerned, as are most health mental health professionals, about what's going on with cell phones, smartphones. There are exceptions for emergencies, which makes perfect sense. Managing a student's health, always important, right? Students not feeling well. I would imagine
like a lot of kids who are diabetic.
Yeah,
I think they like the apps on their phones and stuff.
Or, of course, the obvious one, because a lot of schools have invested a lot of resources, the school issued electronic
like the Chromebooks.
Yeah, which is very popular. My concern.
Although when Quentin Claiborne was here last, he said there's more schools that are turning away from their technology investments because they're now realizing that screens are maybe not the tool.
You know what they call that? Back to the basics, which is I'm a big fan of. My concern, I think I laid it out in the outline for you, Kristen, but I'll give it to you again.
Give it to me.
I have heard from parents, and I hear it from in emails, sometimes texts, sometimes just conversations. They are concerned because a lot of school districts say, well, we already have that.
Yeah, like 90% said that they already have it.
There's a big but here, not being enforced.
So is your feelings of that not being enforced is just anecdotal from people you're hearing from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not
saying it's not true. I'm just like, as far as what does that look like? What does enforcement look like? And I also don't know when we say that 90% of public school districts already have a policy that's similar to this one.
Mm-hmm. But they're, like, in many cases, the problem is they still have the phones in their hands. It's like a trust system.
Because I think it was saying both Shorewood and what was the other one that got Grafton? I think Journal Sentinel profiled some of the districts that already have this. And I think it was Shorewood and Grafton. You have to put it in like a little pouch.
Yeah.
Which and they said it's working.
That would be my plan.
And so
take it out of
instead of just trusting the kids that they're not going to bring it out during class, like you actually have to surrender it in some way.
I don't know if they still do this, but in the old days at the White House, if you had a smartphone, you had to put it in a little basket before you went into any room in the White House. There was a guard there, but you put your phone in this basket. Yeah. You didn't have access to your phone for all the obvious reasons because you're meeting with government officials and all that stuff. Can't record. I'm not saying we should have a basket because that requires someone to oversee and watch the basket, but holstering these things up, to use a bad analogy in a school, I guess, but putting them away from the student's ability to just have access to it, that's all you need.
That's what most of us need. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Who was I seeing talk of predicting this as far as some of the movement going towards not only just for kids, but just like to less screens. And there's these apps that are popping up of like, you shutting down your phone when you're with different people. Like I bought this little, I need to set it up still, but like this little brick thing that you can lock yourself out of your apps on your phone. And then you leave the physical brick somewhere and you cannot unlock it unless you have that brick.
Yeah.
And so like, if I go to dinner with my husband and he would like me not to be on my phone, I can give him the brick and I can't just like get on Instagram in the middle of dinner and be like, hey, I would like to talk to you.
Do you think it's disrespectful to have a phone when only one of the people at the table is using a phone during a dinner?
I think if you both have your phone, and especially sometimes when it's your spouse, because you're like, I see you every day. as long as you're both doing it.
Wow, is that unromantic?
But I do think there's something as far as like we'll say to each other every once in a while and be like, hey, nice hanging out with you. That's kind of our clue to each other to be like, hey, do you want to just talk to me?
Yeah, which is good.
And then you put your phone away. But yeah, I would say sometimes just the unconsciousness of how quickly, like the security blanket of picking up your phone. If you're watching the YouTube stream right now, you can see me miming that action.
Yeah.
That like it's good for all of us to maybe have a physical barrier sometimes from just being addicted to our phone.
We all get reeled in, I use that word on purpose, by our smartphones. And I didn't trust myself driving, so I actually put it away from me, so I can't access.
You can't check it.
I can hear it buzzing because in the morning, you and I both get a million texts from Joe and Bill every damn day of the year, including the weekends. So that's one thing I do because I don't trust myself. I can't have it around me, which I think is a good practice for anyone driving. You shouldn't be texting or looking at your text or your phone in general. The other one is, and you know this because I've told you this for years. I put my phone on my office desk at home Saturday around noon. I don't really pick it up until the next day. You got to step away from this stuff. Like, I was concerned because my daily hours of using my smart were like creeping up into the eights, nines, tens. That's too much. I got it to like 3, 4 now. And
better.
For what I do, not bad, you know, because we have to look at stuff. So that's sort of my sweet spot. Everybody's different because I've had these arguments with my peers, my adult peers, and they're like, I'm just going to do what I want to do, and you're not going to tell me different. It's like, okay, whatever. But there are ramifications to this stuff, including communication. It's breaking down.
Yeah.
We don't talk. We don't talk anymore.
But I think, again, two for two, another good step in the right direction for our kids in Wisconsin as far as legislation that, you know, hopefully will be enforced. Hopefully each district takes this very seriously and comes up with, like, what is the best because you don't want just teachers having to police everything all the time.
Not that it shouldn't be the teacher.
Once the transition happens, because I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of pain of juniors and seniors and kids who are used to having that attitude of, I'm going to do what I want to do. Can't take my phone. And then once the break happens and they realize, oh, life can go on. And then everyone just knows what the rules are and you march forward.
And the other one is, parents, you need to support this. Stop arguing and stop texting your kid during the school day. What are you doing? Leave your kid alone. Your kid needs some time away from your... This is the thing that drives me nuts about parenting. You're not the be-all and end-all. They need some time away from you. A lot of times parents, when kids are young, parents drive them nuts. Minimize the time you're driving your kids nuts. You could do that after a dinner table when you're all sitting there together, which doesn't happen much anymore, having that nice meal together that mom or dad prepared. That's when you can have those conversations.
There you go.
You're on point today, by the way.
Thanks. I think it's because I'm working out before work. 3 days in a row now.
Wow, that's a trend.
Pat myself on the back.
There you go. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken. 620 WTMJ.
And you don't bring me flowers anymore.
Let it breathe a little bit. 620 WTMJ.
It used to be so natural.
We're talking about relationships.
Were we talking about relationships? Yeah. We were talking about parents with their kids.
We were talking about sitting with your husband at a restaurant, listening to each other. This is a classic. This is a musical affirmation of that beauty.
No, this about like a marriage falling apart and like you don't bring me flowers anymore. Like we used to be so good. Isn't
it's
that what this is about?
The pitfalls of not listening to each other. That's what I'm fine. No, I'm not saying you're in trouble. I'm saying generally.
Losing the spark, losing the magic.
Thanks to Jazz for playing.
How do you keep the magic alive 40 years in?
Ooh, that's a good question. I got like an 8-minute answer for that. What do you want to know?
I don't know.
Surprise each other.
That's a good one.
It's the hardest thing to do because when you're with someone for me, almost 50 years if you count high school when we didn't date.
Well, you wouldn't. If you didn't date in high school, you don't count that.
But we knew each other.
That doesn't mean you were dating.
We knew each other.
Yeah. Okay.
So that,
like my parents have been together since they were 16.
That's amazing.
So that's actually
how many years is that now?
Over 50.
That's cool.
After, I think they've been married. I don't know what the number is, but they've been together about 9 or 8 years longer than they're actually married, but a lot. They've been together a very long time. They can count that because they were actually dating. You can't count that because you knew your wife. That's how long your relationship is.
You're very strict on the criteria today. My goodness. Can you put that in writing for me?
Go back. So surprise each other. That's yours?
Yeah, surprise each other. What's yours?
Make each other laugh.
That's always a good one.
I think that is the key to my relationship with Mike. We probably make each other laugh almost every day.
The flip side of that is if my wife uses the F word, I know I've had an epic fail. It's only happened a couple times. That's an epic fail. So that's,
you know the signs.
That's clear.
You know when you're going to go get flowers, basically.
Yeah, whatever you need to do, you got to do it right. Don't stop talking. Go do those things immediately. I wonder if anyone else has that same experience.
That's a good prompt out there. Mm. What is your key to happiness with your
long-term
relationship? Yeah, but also, what is the telltale sign that you know, maybe I've gone too far? 855-616.
I love the text line. It says, you'll keep your marriage alive next year when you win the cream puff eating contest.
Ah!
I think you won it this year. You were robbed.
It's robbed.
The fix was in, and those people who were involved in the fix know what I'm talking about. All right. This is the moment where you can sort of dictate where we go.
Yeah.
Ask us anything, 855-616-1620. Any question for a game? We already got a bunch. I got an email that I'm going to dip into, even though you were less interested, because I have a hard take on it.
I just don't think I know. Yes. Right.
So we're going to do that after the break.
Now it's time for Ask Us Anything on Point Taken. Got a burning question? Give us a call or text on the Siding Unlimited Talk and Text line at 855-616-1620.
Why do we never get an answer?
All right, Ask Us Anything. We do this every Wednesday. We flip around the times a little bit, but today it worked out perfectly with our schedule, and it's been a on-point show today. Actually, all the week's shows, some of the best we've done. Yeah, people
are talking.
There's a buzz. Yeah. There's a buzz in the room. Not really.
Again, it's because I'm working out.
I don't know if that's it, though. I mean, I'm happy for you because that's a good thing. Because, you know, in your age group.
Women lose a lot. I've been hearing that when you hit
muscle
40,
tone, yeah, yeah, yeah.
As a woman, you lose a lot of strength. And my child is not small. So I have to lift some weights.
Yes.
If I want to be able to continue to haul her around.
I've told this before. I haven't for the last year, but I did strength training for about a year and a half at Impact Fitness. Best thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Golf game got better, felt stronger, feel my core strong, feel ready for the show, ready for the questions. All right, so this one, I don't know that you really wanted to do this question.
Dive in.
All right, so I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's like crazy. It's like 2,000 words, but thank you, Pat, for sending me an email. And she admits, Pat does, the question is too long for the text. It's about construction barrels primarily, all the cones. And she asked, easy question, who pays for it? Well,
we
all do, taxpayers, whether state level, local level, whatever, county. But here's what this is my talking point on this. I have noticed, Pat, that after projects are done, sort of the recovery for
Oh my God,
thing,
yes.
What in the world?
The They're amount like, of times you see a bunch of cones with no workers anywhere in
yes.
sight, or even like construction equipment, it's just the cones. You're like, where? Why?
Yeah.
Why are they here?
So
what is happening?
City managers, DPW folks, anybody that works in road construction.
But it's mostly on the highway. I feel like abandoned.
It's everywhere.
You think it's everywhere?
You gotta keep track of this stuff. And if I'm driving through, maybe let's say it's a city I haven't been. Maybe Elm Grove. I haven't been there in a couple of years. And I see stuff laying all haphazardly. It gives me a negative impression of Elm Grove.
Elm Grove.
And I love that city. The Playhouse.
Wait, did this happen in Elm Grove?
No, I just randomly picked it.
That's a random one to pick because I feel like they usually have their.
I was trying to pick one I hadn't been to.
I's dotted and their T's crossed. Elm Grove's nice.
Yeah, very nice. Because you go there.
I mean, my sister-in-law lives on that side of Tosa. Like she's basically just on the edge of Elm Grove.
So my answer is, yeah, we all need to do better on this. Stop leaving these things laying around for months after construction's done.
Yes, I agree.
Somebody needs to be tasked to picking these damn things up.
Because with Pat's point, we're the ones paying for all these barrels or cones, and then we're obviously wasting them because they could be picked up when they're not needed anymore and used at the next site.
Yeah.
So there's an over influx of cones.
She's also
that she's angry about that. He or she don't know.
I don't know, but she's all he or
Pat,
she is really
like the SNL character.
Exactly.
Ambiguous.
Not passing judgment, just
don't
know.
No, I'm just saying it's an ambiguous name.
So I don't know. You know, the sales part of this, the receipts part of this is the hard part. Like. He or she's more worried about the accounting. 100 barrels got dropped on. Do we pick up 100 barrels? Then we have to pay for the ones that are missing. I don't know.
Who do we have to ask about this?
I'm going to put some feelers out.
All right.
DPW. I have some friends.
DPW?
Yeah.
Lestat? Who do you think more likely?
Probably both, but I'll put some feelers out because I'm passionate about this. All right. What do you want to answer?
Someone wants to know if you gained any weight when you were in Europe.
I gained 3 pounds on the trip and I lost it when I got back.
Easy.
I'm the same weight now as I was in like March.
What happened to Bender Park? The Bender Park complex in Oak Creek.
Are they assuming about the park?
I don't know. I have no idea what Bender Park is.
It's a county park. So the question should go to I have not been down there. I took my grandkids swimming a couple of years ago. It was fine. It's changed. Resources are tight with the county. I would assume that they're talking about that. I do know that our supervisor, Steve Taylor, said that they're doing some road work down there. So that hopefully it would improve. That road down was pretty rough. And I do know that north of that, Lake Vista, a park that I named when I was mayor, is doing wonderful. There's retail. They're not retail. There's residential now. There's park. It's doing fantastic. Reclaim land from the abuses of the county many, many years ago, decades ago. Did I answer the question? I think so. A lot of people commenting about the marriage thing.
Well, yeah. Read some of those as far as good.
All right. There's a lot of them. Let me get to the one that sort of. Where is that one that just prompted me to. There's so many texts coming in. This is from the 262. And I thought, I want to read this because I love this. It's always been my motto to new married couples, always keep the magic alive. I used to warm his towels in the dryer when he was taking a shower and having it ready for him when he got out.
Oh, that is luxury.
Having a nice hot cup of coffee, waiting for him, holding hands. This sounds like porn music than like romantic music, but I'm not sure what jazz is doing with that. When they go out for a walk. Are you a big fan of the holding hands thing?
Yeah, we hold hands. You know what's really weird, though? I don't know where this music is starting to. Have you ever held hands in the opposite direction?
No, we don't like that. We don't like that.
No, most people don't like it.
Yeah.
So like in heterosexual couples, when you hold hands and you like flip directions, it feels really weird.
Yeah.
And so I always wonder, when I have gay friends, like I always ask that as far as who's the dom, who's the top side hand? Because it feels weird when you do it the other way.
That question?
It depends on the couple.
See, we have a thing where our pinky fingers are like, when we,
like pinky swear?
Yeah, not like that. It's hard to explain, but it's just a different way of holding hands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it's nice to
this
hold
music really took a turn.
Yeah, get that music off. Strange question is that. No, I don't want to get that one. It's an ad-based question.
We're not going to comment on our partners on how they choose to word their ads.
Somebody asked about Springsteen. A comparison between Springsteen and Elton John.
Interesting comparison. I would not put those two, besides being both iconic. Very different kinds of music.
Yeah, I mean, one's British.
He does
live in the United States now. He lives in Vegas. I'm a Springsteen guy.
Yeah, I think that's an obvious one for you. Our song that we danced to was Your Song from Elton John
for
a wedding.
Brilliant song.
I like both.
I've seen them both play.
Was the question who's made a bigger impact on American culture?
This thing is spinning so much, it's a hard time keeping up with the text. So, all right, here it is. Which music is more important to the American culture and whose music? I enjoy Springsteen versus Elton John. More important to the American, I would say Springsteen, but.
I feel like the cultural relevance of things that Springsteen talked about in his songs, yes. You know, it'd be an interesting, like some movie nerd, if they could figure this out, of whose music is used more often in movies, like on soundtracks. Because I have no data to back this up. I would imagine there's more Elton John songs on soundtracks than Bruce Springsteen.
I totally agree. Springsteen.
And is that qualify as a cultural impact?
No, I mean, Springsteen is so unique. Elton John sort of transcends. Everybody likes Elton John, right?
It's Harley drivers. Harley motorists.
Yeah.
I wasn't here when that happened.
That whole thing was stupid. Yeah. I would have gone and seen Elton John if I got free tickets. All right, we'll take a break. Ask us anything, 855-616-1620. Signing Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Any questions for our game? We'll do our best to answer them. We got one here about President Trump. We'll do that after the break on 620 WTMJ. Ask us anything. Steve from Oak Creek was on the phone line with producer Jazz asking about, I think, the physical location of the Oak Creek waterways. Starts in Franklin, actually. Goes through South Milwaukee. To be honest, I don't know where exactly it is in the city. It's all over the place because it kind of twists and turns. I think it connects to the Root River Parkway at some point, which is south of Oak Creek. It's a one of those things that people always talk about and how the city got its name.
Hmm.
Oak Creek, city I was the mayor of. What else?
Really?
What else is interesting on this little text line? What do you think of the Packers throwback jerseys?
I liked them.
I love the helmets. Man, I'd wear those every week.
I thought they looked great. I mean, don't love how they played, but I thought they looked great.
Why'd you have to bring that up?
I mean,
that hurt my feelings that game. Honestly, God, I was so irritated.
All right, Snowflake, you're fine.
All right, we're getting a lot of fun questions. What's my favorite donut? Crawler. Dip it right into the coffee. Those things weigh like 5 pounds, though. You gotta go easy on those. What's your favorite donut?
I like a vanilla Long John.
That's a winner.
Mm-hmm.
That is
or just like a simple, not Krispy Kreme, but like a simple traditional glazed.
Mm-hmm. Not the Jimmy's all over it?
No sprinkles, just like a circular hole in the middle, glazed, but no frosting is also very good with some milk.
See, I don't like Jimmy's because in the days when I used to eat a lot more donuts than I do now, it's a mess in your car.
Mm.
I don't care how carefully they're all over the place. Why my old radio pal, Carol Kane, total ban on eating in the car. Never.
It's a way to keep a clean car. That's for sure.
It is. It is.
Meanwhile, I have candy wrappers everywhere in my car.
Had a kid, so every once in a while, some of my grandkids are in my truck or whatever vehicle we're driving that day, and we put in the car seats, and that's a whole thing. My goodness, hooking those
car
suckers.
Seats, yeah.
Oh my God! Glad I don't have to do that every day. And then I discover, like a week later, they've got like goldfish and there's wrappers. Like I didn't give you goldfish or anything.
A toy car somewhere.
Yeah, it's like where are the like little fake spiders? Like did you bring that into the car? I knew they weren't in there before. I knew they were not there before. Anything else interesting pop up? Strange question. No, we're not doing that one. A lot of questions about news. We're not news people. We talk about the news, political news, but the news department is run by some great people we work with and I think do a great job. It's the only truly, I think, other than maybe local public radio, actual news, like unbiased news in this market. My opinion. On radio.
Oh, on radio.
Yeah. Not on TV, of course. There's great people, including our friend Matt Smith, who works as the political director on Channel 12.
Do we know who's going to be on the show this week yet?
Our guest?
That email comes out on Friday. Yeah. Up front.
Oh, his guest.
And then subsequently what we talk about when he's with us on Mondays.
I would guess, knowing Matt Smith, he's going to have somebody to talk about the results of yesterday. In some form or fashion. Maybe a national, he'll have a national guest, national guest, and a state guest. My guess is I have no idea. Or, because we talked about it, the Jill Underly appearance.
If she will say yes to an interview.
Yeah. She doesn't do interviews, though.
I thought she actually, she held her own yesterday.
Yeah. All right. You got a little bit of time. Yeah. We'll take a break.
We'll take one more break. If you have a question, 855-616-1620. We will get to it on the other side of this on Point Taken. I can buy myself
flowers. Staying on that flowers theme, question for Steve and Chris, and how much of President Trump's aggressive implementation of his policies do you think comes from his own convictions and ideals versus mostly from his trusted advisors?
That's a lot of speculation. I have no idea. I
mean,
I think offline we were talking about this with Bill as far as the conflicting incentives or motivations of people who are in his, are his advisors, right? And the some of the side that is more like the pro-birth, Christian nationalist type stuff versus very pro-capitalist, like business side stuff. You know, I mean, we saw that even when Elon Musk was more invested, right? That like some of his interests conflicted with other interests. So I don't know. I think it probably depends on the topic of which ones he cares about, which ones he's, and which one he passes off that he cares about because someone close to him cares about it. But I am not close enough inside that circle to have any idea, really.
I mean, I think he subscribes to the last person.
I think he cares about making money, which he has.
Yeah.
His family's definitely doing pretty well this time around.
If somebody that he likes says something he likes, he probably would go that direction, but that can change day to day. This one is for kind of you, I think, because you live in Milwaukee. Moving to Milwaukee for law school at Marquette, any recommendations for neighborhoods or areas to live?
Ooh.
That's a good one.
Well, if you, I mean, I would say anywhere downtown. I guess there's more places being built downtown.
Right here on Wisconsin Avenue.
As far, on Wisconsin Avenue. Then you're still close enough to campus, but not too far. You're kind of in the heart of where a lot of things are happening. If you want a more like residential area, but want to drive, you'll have to drive a little bit further. Bayview or Washington Heights are great. There's a lot of great neighborhoods. I think it depends on like what you're looking for. You want like a loft or apartment, or do you want a house?
I love this one. What do you do when you run out of the things to talk about and you still have 5 minutes left in your show?
We never stare at each other.
Yeah. We never run out of things to talk
about. Makes great radio.
Do you think we run out of things to talk about? We never do.
No.
Because we have a long list.
Well, we have a long list, but there's also just random tangents that we can go on, and sometimes that derails us.
Yes.
Looking at you.
But I will say this, in defense of derailments, sometimes that's where the magic happens. Otherwise, you can be stiff and non-interesting and non-engaging to the audience and to our fans.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that in defense of the occasional derailment.
It's fine.
I'm staring at Greg Matzik. What a good-looking man Greg Matzik is. That's what we talk about when we run out of topics. He's a good-looking man.
He is a good-looking man. Highly suggest you watch the YouTube stream. Just text watch to 855-616-1620.
How many people you think just for... Well, you got Jessica, too.
Jessica, too.
As far as looks go, that's A-team right there. Yeah. Hello. And great content. And a terrific producer.
I think you really proved the point of what happens. We didn't run out of things to talk about. I think we just decided to...
All right. We got to get out of here. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Do it again tomorrow.
Point taken.